And welcome back to the show again. Thank you so very much for being with us today. I'm very excited to introduce you to my next guest. His name is Eric Von Alstein. He is a multiple-time author and has owned and run 5 businesses in the past. We will talk about some of them today. But first, we want to deal with his new book. It's called Automatic Influence: New Power for Change in Work and Life. I'm very excited to learn about that. I need some influence. Welcome to the show, Eric. How are you?
Thank you, Jim. Doing fantastic. Thank you.
Influence isn't automatic, Eric. You have to earn influence, I thought. How do you get automatic influence?
Yeah, in fact, I've actually told people, if you just read my book, all the wealth, all the success, everything is just automatic. You don't need to work anymore. So certainly not the case, not the case. And oftentimes what we're thinking about is when we talk about influence, we're thinking about just influencing others. But I'm talking about the broad concept of how perception influences emotion and motivation, which then influences our decisions and behavior. So it's really going deep into the way we're wired as human beings and then using those principles to lead better, to serve people better.
All right. How are we wired as human beings? Human beings are disgusting, mean, blood-craving, bad things.
Well, you know, actually, I've got a whole chapter that I title Automatic Evil that shows actually how those bad things originate and what we can do actually to offset it in ourselves and in others. I mean, you think about, especially in today's political climate, and this could get to the root and to the heart of so many of those challenges, for sure. But when I talk about human nature, basically I'm saying that perception precedes emotion and motivation. We often think of emotion as the thing that's the deepest part of us, but I make the point that it's actually, there's something deeper than emotion and motivation that drives it. And when we can identify what that is and start to work there, change is much easier. So the new power to change is a strategy for getting to the roots of where change really happens instead of just hacking at the branches and leaves.
All right. So if my emotions start with my perception, right? So that's the essence of this. What does that mean? Does that mean that before I get mad at my wife, I perceive that the dishes weren't done to my satisfaction? Help me here. Give me an example so I can understand.
Yeah,
this.
Yeah, absolutely. The challenge is that we perceive reality and actually the things we imagine to be real so quickly and so intelligently that we don't see them. So they happen too quick for us even to notice. I give an example of Danny in an office setting, who gets approached by the boss, and the boss says, "Hey, Danny, I've got great news. You got the promotion." And all the other workers around Danny overhear the conversation and they react. So Henry's happy. Susan is sad. Anna's angry. Frank is afraid. And Nick feels nothing at all. So I asked the question, how in the world can 5 people in the same situation, hearing the exact same information, have 5 completely different reactions? And it gets to the point that situations don't really move us, but our view of the situations move us. So these 5 workers felt different because they saw the situation in 5 different ways. So when I describe perception, I'm not just describing physical sight, but it's basically the way we characterize and evaluate something as good or bad. It's kind of like what I mean when I say, I call it the way I see it. So in this situation, Henry saw something good, an opportunity to get Danny's old job. He didn't just see Danny's promotion, he saw something else. And so that perception instantly drove him to feel happy, while the others had all kinds of different ones that drove those different emotions.
What is new power?
New power is what we get when we start realizing how this process works. So when we could see what happened in that click of an instant, in that blink of an instant, when we decided what is happening and how good or bad it is, then we can identify it and we can start to change it. So if we start with perception, instead of starting with our attitudes and our behaviors and all the things we typically start with to try to change things, then we find that new power. So the power is the power to change our perceptions. And actually, this goes back to being entrepreneurs. If we're serving people, we need to think in terms of the customer. people who are effective entrepreneurs usually are so radically committed to the customer's point of view. A good example of this would be Jeff Bezos at Amazon. At every meeting with leaders, he puts out a chair that's empty. He says, no one can sit in that chair. Executives look at that chair, and he says, that's the customer's chair. So every time they have a meeting that involves their business, they are making sure that they see from the customer's perspective. And I think this is a vital thing for entrepreneurs. If someone's out there doing a startup, someone's trying to build a business, they usually are very late in getting to the customer, the prospect for their business, to find out what it is that the customer actually values. And so there's a lot of wasted time and energy doing things that are not in line with what the customer wants. So the new power is power not only to see how we see, but it's power to jump in and get the perceptions in the mind of the customers or the prospective customers for a business.
All right, Eric, let's get really practical here and talk about the situation that you were just describing. The five people are affected differently by the news that someone gets promoted. So I am going to be the one who has read your book. I understand these concepts. I have this perception. I see what's going on around me. I see one person is excited, one person's mad, one person is not phased at all. What do I now practically do to be the smart one in the room? So walk me through the action steps. So instead of getting mad, I need to perceive. Is that step number one?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. From birth, we're wired to believe that our own point of view is the point of view. So we look at a situation like this and go, what in the world is up with Anna? Why is Anna angry? And we usually write it off to Anna's stupid or senseless, as opposed to saying, okay, Anna's angry for a good reason. Our emotions are much more reasonable than we think. Now, the wrong expression of emotions, that's a bad thing. Like when people say, listen, I'm being reasonable, you're being emotional. Usually what they're talking about is the expression of the emotion. So it's like, it's one thing to feel angry. It's another to start, you know, flinging chairs in the room. So I think that it is wrong to sometimes express those emotions. But to know that people have emotions and motivations for very, very logical, good reasons means that I'm actually now trying to find out what's under the surface that's driving Anna's anger, as opposed to saying Anna's a senseless idiot. And a lot of times when we get into political discourse, when we get a division between, you know, sides on a political party, or when we're dealing with all kinds of disputes within an organization, a lot of times we jump to the conclusion that we are the ones that see everything accurately and our point of view is the only point of view. Therefore, we never enable ourselves to get into the shoes of other people and resolve issues. So the smart person in the room, the smartest person in the room, is the person who has what I call perceptual intelligence. And that goes deeper than emotional intelligence. Now, you know, emotional intelligence is a whole other issue or a whole other arena. But if we could see and understand that there are perceptions that instantly, automatically precede emotions and automatically influence emotions, then we can get down and start to see how people see. There's actually studies that show that the best negotiators aren't people who feel how other people feel, but the best negotiators are people who see how the other person sees. So, for instance, in a negotiation, if I could listen long enough and well enough to understand what the other person really values and then tailor my solutions to those values, negotiations are much more effective. So I just make the point that perception runs deeper than empathy, perceptual intelligence runs deeper than emotional intelligence, and the most intelligent people in the room, practically speaking, are those who recognize that.
You know what my mama always said, Eric? Shut up and think and then talk. And I think that advice would be very useful as you're going through this process, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've actually got a chapter called Automatic Humility that goes right to that point. Why is it that we're more interested in offering our opinion? We're quick to offer opinions. We're waiting in a conversation to offer our opinions, but we're very rarely and very rare that we actually are authentically listening. And I'd say, let's get to the root of that and try to, instead of trying to say, hey, listen, just listen better, maybe we should get a better view of our own limited awareness. I tell the story of four people on a plane. I don't know if you've heard this one. President of the United States, world's smartest man, Boy Scout priest. Engine fails. They all have to bail, but there's only three parachutes. So President of the United States grabs a chute and jumps in. I'm the President of the United States. The world needs me. Then the world's smartest man grabs a chute and jumps in. Hey, listen, I'm the world's smartest man. The world needs me. And then the priest with a sad and somber face turns to the Boy Scout and says, son, I've had a long, good life. You go ahead. Take the last parachute. And the Boy Scout says, no worry, father. There's still two parachutes left. And the priest says, what do you mean? He says, the world's smartest man just jumped out with my backpack.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it is. A lot of times we think we're smart about things, but we're not really fully aware. And so our intelligence is working us in the wrong direction, literally causing us to pride comes before a fall, literally speaking, in that joke.
Well, I've heard that joke before, and I've always enjoyed it. I think it's really a good one. It's always fun when you insert a person in there, like the smartest man in the world, Donald Trump or whatever. But anyway, I don't want to get political. Let's talk about how we can use this knowledge then to influence others. All right. So I want to, without being harsh, without manipulating right. people, I still want to use this understanding to get what I want out of the room. Right, Eric? Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, I think that power, I mean, kind of the first lesson in the road trip is that power is for serving people rather than using people. And people are going to pick up on those differences. When they really see a leader has their best interest in mind, they're going to be more inclined to follow. And when they see that that's not the case, they're going to be more inclined to resent and resist. So, you know, it has a way of just sorting itself out. People try to use tactics of influence without truly seeing people as people of equal value and needs as themselves. You know, they don't influence very well. And I think that's just.
All right. So what do I do then if I want to use this body of knowledge? Do I start with the humility?
Well, I make the case in my book that if we can start with the way we see ourselves and we start to see how limited our own perception is, humility is automatic. That's why I wrote the chapter, Automatic Humility. Humility is a characteristic, I think, that flows from the way we perceive. So there's just a whole bunch of practical application of this in our personal lives, in our business, serving customers, dealing with conflict. It's massive because when you get to the roots of the way human nature works, we can change things. You know, I recently heard the story of a principal at a school who was trying to solve a problem where the girls would basically go into the bathroom, put on lipstick, and then press their lips to the mirrors. So what happens is there was these kiss marks on the mirrors, and every night the maintenance team is, you know, spending extra time trying to scrub off these marks. So maintenance team puts up signs, girls keep kissing the mirrors. And then they tell the principal. The principal asks the girls to stop. The girls ignore her. And then she demands more, and they keep ignoring. She pleads, and they keep ignoring. So finally, she comes up with this idea. She had this moment of insight and called a couple girls into the bathroom and brought in the custodian and said, listen, girls, these lipstick marks are causing trouble for every one of us every night. Look how hard it is to clean the mirrors. So she motions to the custodian. He takes out a squeegee, dips it in the toilet, and wipes the mirror. And there was never another kiss mark on the mirror from that point forward. And I make the point out of that when we can identify a better way to solve a problem, then we can be much more effective. Think about how much work they did before, putting up the signs, telling the girls to stop, as opposed to how much work they did after they only said a couple things and literally they had complete compliance. Before, they worked and worked and worked and had no compliance. And I think just a funny way of illustrating how we can have wisdom to solve problems, or we can solve problems in unwise ways. And so I think starting with perception, using the book as a way to understand how to start with perception in your own life and working with other people and working with customers is going to make us incredibly more effective.
What is the ultimate human goal? I know my ultimate goal. I want to see if I'm in line with the rest of the 6 billion people on Earth.
Oh, my goodness. This is a big one. In fact, I wrote a whole chapter in my book about what this goal is. And it is a challenge for people to digest this. So I don't even know if I can say it without getting into a whole discussion, but I guess that's where you want to go. I'm happy to have the discussion, but it's kind of an involved thought. It's kind of somewhat counterintuitive because I feel like people don't have the same goals. We have so much division. We have so many conflicts. People are going different ways, but what is the common kind of theme? And when we can understand what that goal is, and we can understand how we all pursue that goal all the time, then I think that that can help us be more influential. So do we want to reveal it?
Yeah, now you made me even want to know it more. I'm sitting here, I got to know it now. Tell me.
Exactly. Well, I make the point, and it's an involved, it's a whole chapter of evaluation of this, because these are profound issues. So it's something you have to take some time to really look at. But the ultimate goal, the constant human goal is pursuit of maximum good as we see it. Not maximum good as it is, but maximum good as we see it. And the challenge is that we all see differently. Go back to Danny and his promotion story. We all see things differently, but we are all pursuing our own vision of what we believe to be maximum good. So when we look around at people around us, teenagers, you know, parents looking at teenagers, workers, you know, management looking at labor looking at management, we often think that people are actually intentionally pursuing evil. Most of the time, that's absolutely not the case. They are, in their own mind, pursuing what they think is best, which is maximum good as they see it. So that's the ultimate human goal, and it's profound. It can't be unpacked in a soundbite, but let me just tell you, it's huge for helping us be more influential.
All right, and it comes down to, as you said, as they perceive it. So what do I do, Eric, when I know your perception is just flat out wrong, right? You know, so I understand that you're coming from a good spot, but your facts are just wrong, you know, and I can prove it to you with 17 different websites, 93 different sources. You're just flat out wrong, my friend.
Yes, and you know the truth is, there are people who are right, and there are people who are wrong. And I think that that's something where the first step is always for us to be willing to be humble and question our assumptions. The question is, am I seeing this right? And we got to, you know, Gandhi says we must be the change we want to see in the world. And I think the best thing we can do is start to do that for ourselves, to say, okay, I always see myself as doing good, and yet other people see what I do as not good. Is it possible that I'm wrong? Because I know a lot of other people are wrong, and they don't think they are. So maybe I'm wrong. So maybe I should start with myself. But then I think that when people all get a mindset of that sees how perception works, how we're prone to error, how we make mistakes, I think people are automatically more open to allow people to provide them with information and perhaps be corrected. It goes back to that listening issue we talked about before. People who think they know everything that they need to know won't listen. But people who see themselves as mostly blind want to listen. And I think that the key is to start there, to understand how limited our perception really is, and then work from there to start to lay a groundwork for people to get along and figure things out. And I also think, here's another thing, I think it's possible for us to see accurately yet see different. And I give the example in a recent blog of my view to Mount Rainier. I live in the Pacific Northwest, and at sunrise, that mountain is shadowy, and at sunset, that mountain is pink. But yet, if I lived in eastern Washington, let's say Yakima, the opposite is the case. The mountain is shady at sunset and pink at sunrise. So who's right? The issue is both of us are right. We're both seeing different aspects of the same mountain. And I think a lot of people argue about a different perception that is actually compatible. It's like we're both seeing partially and we're both seeing accurately. So there's a way for us to see right and to see wrong. And I think understanding how we see and that we can see in these ways gives us more perspective, more wisdom to resolve conflict.
We only have about a minute or two left, Eric. What is the electric life and how do I get plugged in?
The electric life. That's the conclusion of the book, and I basically describe how this book is really about power, and it's latent power. It's power that is dormant. It's power that has really been unused, much like electricity was, the idea of electricity was unknown to engineers. They didn't string up wires and they didn't, innovate and they didn't bring this power to people's homes until thousands and thousands of years after they knew about what it was. And I kind of trace the history of the way Egyptians used to use electric eels to cure headaches and all the way forward basically to where we are today to say it's one thing to know that there's power. It's another to actually string up the wires, so to speak, and put that power to use. And my encouragement to people is to get in and get the insights they need from this book so that they can start stringing the wires and they can start powering up their lives in practical ways, just like we did with technology.
Eric, how can people find out more about you, follow you online, visit your website, and get a copy of the book?
Yes. Automatic Influence is available on Amazon. You can go to my website, which is ericvanalstein.com. Find out more about it there.
Fantastic. Eric, thank you so very much for being with us, and I hope you and your six kids have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you, Jim. You too.
And we will be right back.